It's Central Time. I'm Veronica Ricker.
And I'm Rob Farron. You're with us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up on Central Time, we are in yet another polar vortex. We'll hear some suggestions from a Wisconsin author about books to read that'll actually make us appreciate winter.
First, it's time to turn our attention to Washington for our weekly look at Congress with USA Today politics and Congress editor Paul Singer. He joins us every week at this time to share his insight into how politics really works in our nation's capital.
Yesterday, the top Republican on the Ways and Means Committee proposed a tax overhaul that's being scrutinized by Democrats and Republicans alike. It's the first big overhaul proposal in quite some time.
Also earlier this week, Congress's longest-serving member ever announced that he'll retire. Representative John Dingell has been in the office since the Eisenhower administration.
And Secretary of Defense Chuck Hagel announced Monday that the U.S. military plans to downsize, especially the Army, to face new threats, a change that still has to go through Congress. Paul Singer, always a pleasure to have you here. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks a lot. Great to be here with you guys.
Let's start with John Dingell, the longest-serving member of the U.S. Congress in history, as I understand it. What's the story, and why is he leaving now?
Well, he's 89 years old. He was first elected to Congress in 1955, taking a seat that had been held by his father. He, at this point, has said, essentially, he's tired of the Congress. He's tired of the conflict. He's tired of the inability to get stuff done, and it's time to move on. Dingell has had a hand in almost every major piece of legislation in the past, three or four decades. It's a pretty remarkable career.
Is it rare for somebody coming out of Congress? I can only think of a couple times that it's happened where they're so critical of the state of affairs in Congress.
Well, it's not rare this year. We've been hearing a lot of that. A lot of the people who have been retiring this year have said, basically, we can't get anything done. It's no fun anymore. Last year, we had a guy who left, a senator from South Carolina, who left to join the Heritage Foundation as the head of their kind of lobbying arm, saying, basically, I can get more done outside of Congress than I can inside Congress. So it's not all that uncommon at this point for members of Congress to say that what is really chasing them out is this sense that it's just not a lot of fun at this point.
He's being chased out, but as you said, his father was in this seat, and there's a word that his wife might run to replace him. So it's not it's too bad for him now, not for his spouse.
Yeah, Debbie Dingell, she's about 30 years younger than he is. I believe she's somewhere around 60. And she's been in Washington for a very long time as well. She has worked for a trade association, automobile association here in town for many years. She's a fixture here too. And I don't know, with a name like Dingell, she very might well win that seat. And it's possible that, for 100 years, that seat will be in one family.
Some of the talk I've seen here is this is yet another guy who had his partisan opinion, but he knew how to make deals. He knew how to compromise when he needed to. And Congress is losing that kind of people. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah. Well, in fact, Congress is losing a lot of very experienced people, a lot of people with a long history. Something like 30% or 40% of the Congress now has only been in office for 3 or 4 years. I'll tell you, my favorite Dingell story was when several chairmen had to go testify about some budget bill. And at the hearing, the guy who was running the hearing says, well, I'll have the chairman start first. And everyone looked at each other and said, which chairman? And he said, oh, Mr. Big Chairman, by which he meant John Dingell. And that's how people viewed him. He was Mr. Big Chairman.
Well, we'll stay with Michigan. Michigan Republican Dave Camp made news yesterday. He unveiled a tax overhaul plan. What was he proposing?
Well, his proposal is really a sweeping overhaul of the tax code. He is recommending that we mash the current 7 different tax rates down into basically 2. The top rate for almost everybody would go drop down from 35% to 25% tax, with an exception for the very, very wealthiest, but basically 99% of taxpayers would pay in those two categories. He'd get rid of most itemized deductions. You'd have a standard deduction that would be larger and more generous, but you wouldn't have to itemize. He'd close a bunch of tax loopholes. He'd lower corporate taxes. I mean, it's every piece of the tax code would be affected. They actually said at one point there was 250 sections of the tax code that would just go away entirely. It's pretty dramatic and bold.
Is there broad agreement in Congress, obviously disagreement, I assume, in the particulars, but agreement on the idea that something needs to happen, there needs to be a substantial overhaul of the tax code?
You know, that's a really interesting question. Nobody wants to do this. The Senate leaders, both the Senate and the Democratic and the Republican leader in the Senate yesterday said this is not going to happen this year. John Boehner, the House Speaker, today said basically Mr. Camp's document is a discussion draft, worthwhile starting this conversation, but it ain't going to pass. And I think there is broad agreement that it is a good idea. There is broad agreement that it's time to fix the tax code. In some of the same ways that you and I have talked about before, there's kind of broad agreement that we need to get our handles on entitlements and figure out some sort of, you know, better way to budget our system. But there's just no real heart to get into this debate and pass a bill.
Is it that there's no heart in an election year to do it or ever?
There's certainly no heart in an election year. Ever is a really long time. But the last time there was a major overhaul of the tax code was 1986. I don't say it's undoable. I don't think it is undoable. And I think at some point it'll probably happen. But, you have to get to a point where there is a party in power in the House and in the Senate and in the White House where there is enough trust to really negotiate a deal. And I don't think that is the current situation here in Washington right now.
Is this something that people in Congress are looking and thinking, oh, our constituents are really into this? They really want a major overhaul of the tax code. Is it a sexy issue, or is this an eye glazer that people don't necessarily want to touch?
Yeah, it's hard. It is. I mean, once you get started on this conversation about tax code, you know, tax rates and brackets and deductions, everybody sort of glazes over. I think it is fair to say that everybody likes less taxes, and it's always fun for a lawmaker to be able to say, or a candidate to be able to say, I'm in favor of less tax. I think, you know, the issue here is, can you get the public engaged in the notion that our tax system has become too clunky, too difficult to manage, unfair in fundamental ways? Let's fix it. I don't know that anyone has really started that campaign yet, so I don't really know what we can gauge whether the American people really care.
A risk here is that if you put out a detailed plan, you're giving people a lot of ammunition against you. Is it at least significant that somebody said, hey, it maybe isn't going to happen, but here is a starting point for a discussion?
Well, I think that's where Camp deserves some real recognition. He actually did this with Max Baucus, who's the Democratic chair of the Finance Committee in the Senate. They've been doing this all year long. They've been sitting and negotiating this thing out all year long. They went on a bus tour around the country to talk to people about how should we reform the tax code. The problem is that Camp, as the chairman, he's term limited at the chairman of Ways and Means, so he's not likely to be in that seat at the end of this year. And Baucus is already gone. He was named ambassador to China a couple of weeks ago. So, you know, there's no champion for this effort now. But, yeah, you have to give them credit for sitting down and putting on paper the first major overhaul, or at least proposal to overhaul the tax code in a generation.
Paul Singer is with us. He's with USA Today. He's their politics and Congress editor. We'll pick up more congressional issues coming up, including minimum wage laws in Arizona that some people are saying discriminatory may enter into the congressional race, and the size of the military. That's all coming up in just a few. We're back with USA Today politics and Congress editor Paul Singer. We're discussing happenings in Congress this week. Another big discussion going on in Congress, Paul, the response to the announcement earlier this week from the Secretary of Defense on cutting the size of the Army, other parts of the military. Cutting military bases in congressional districts, I know, is always really popular with the people who represent those districts, right?
Yeah, well, in fact, Secretary of Defense, Chuck Hagel, said he has asked for a round of base closures, and basically Congress said, forget about it. So that's not going to happen. The interesting challenge will be how do you shrink the budget for the Pentagon over time without shrinking the number of facilities? And they don't really have an answer for that yet.
Have you seen response from people in Congress to the plan that the secretary floated?
Well, you know, there has been an ongoing discussion in Congress about the levels, the proper levels for defense spending. I think it's clear that the size of the force is shrinking. And keep in mind, part of the reason it's shrinking is because of cuts in the budget that Congress themselves kicked off with the sequester a year or so ago. So I don't think anybody argues the point that there's going to be a tighter defense budget and probably a smaller force. Where you'll get into the arguments is when you try to shut down a particular weapon system or you try to shut down a particular facility. Obviously, then there is a constituency directly affected that can leap up and down and say, no. But we won't get to that for a little while because Congress still has to basically chew this over and come up with their own version of the budget. You know, these documents out of the administration are really just sort of statements of principle. They don't have any direct effect other than this is what we would like to do.
Well, one thing affecting us here in Wisconsin, there's been a response from at least one of our senators here. One of the cuts would be toward orders of ships, coastal combat ships that are built here in Wisconsin, and worries about how that'll affect the job situation.
Right. Well, every one of these cuts, any cut in the Pentagon budget, directly comes back to a contractor somewhere. That's, you know, the magic trade-off. That's one of the reasons why they like to do these things in big packages, so that they can, you know, trade off your pain for my pain. But it's very hard to do. And you know, even when they do, you know, sort of a formal base closing kind of commission, it becomes this very painful process because ultimately somebody's going to lose. But you sort of reverse the question, you know, for your listeners, is it worth it to them to save $100 billion a year in defense cuts, you know, in defense spending, for instance, if the part of the outcome is we're going to lose, what, 150 or 250 local jobs? Is that the trade-off that we're worth making? It's a really hard thing to do.
Here's an issue we talked about yesterday on the show. Arizona is getting a lot of attention for a bill that some people describe as a religious freedom bill, others an anti-LGBT rights bill. It would allow business owners to decline to serve customers based on religious grounds. Some people see that targeting gays, lesbians, and others. There have been threats of boycotts of Arizona if that becomes law. Key Republicans, including the two senators from Arizona, have said, hey, Jan Brewer, governor of Arizona, veto that bill. Is this giving us any insight how LGBT issues will play out in the midterm elections?
It's an interesting question. I mean, you know, even Mitt Romney came out last night and opposed this bill, said it should be vetoed. You know, depends on where you live. I think it would probably be a hard thing for a Republican in some of the northern climes, you know, in New York, possibly even in Madison, Wisconsin, to say that I favor a bill that allows for this, you know, for a company to decline service to a gay couple, for instance. However, in Alabama, maybe they can get away with it. It depends on where you are. I think the long and the short of it is, it is clear that the trend now is towards more rights and public recognition for gay and lesbian couples and for gays and lesbians in general. I think that is just where the country is trending. But it's not all there yet, and so there will be issues where, or places where, this will still be a battle and a bitter one fought out at the polls.
I know, as you say, it'll vary state to state, but on a national level, is there one party or the other hoping this will or won't be an issue or related issues that come up in the election?
Well, you know, since there's not a national election, as it were, this year, again, I think it'll be a bigger deal state by state. There will be some Senate races where this might play out. There is a Senate race in Georgia where the candidates are primarily competing for who can be most conservative, right? They might endorse this bill. Senate races, again, in Arkansas may be the same deal. Iowa, maybe not so much. I mean, it really is a state by state issue in that case. And again, part of the issue is that each state has taken a different approach to gay marriage, but the courts now, even in Texas, which is no liberal bastion, has overturned a ban on gay marriage. So, I mean, I think, again, it will play in elections, but it'll play in elections very differently depending on where you live, and at the moment, it's pretty clear the trend is towards more rights for gays.
Well, speaking of trends, a growing trend in the country is dislike or lack of confidence in Congress. We see a new Fox News poll showing that Congress has the least confidence of any institution they asked about in the United States. Just 5% of Americans have a great deal of confidence in Congress, and a minority has some confidence in it. We've seen polls like this, but is there any way that Congress can dig itself out of this this crisis of its identity in the nation?
you know, I feel good about those polls because they make reporters look good by comparison. this is where we're at this time. I mean, Mitt Romney was right. You know, 47% will embrace his side of the agenda. 47% are going to embrace Barack Obama's side of the agenda, basically to knee jerk. And as long as that is the case, we are that divided a country and that narrowly divided a country. It will be hard to make progress on large issues because you don't have an overwhelming consensus on large issues. When that happens, you end up with a Congress that everybody hates. But I'll tell you that, you know, the trend has been in those numbers for Congress has been better over the past couple of months. Back in October when the government shut down, you know, there were sexually transmitted diseases that had a better approval rating than Congress, literally. In the past couple of months, Congress is no longer listed as the biggest problem in America, which, again, that's better than it was. So, you know, these trends kind of ebb and flow. The fact of the matter is we are in a time of divided government, and that spawns this sense of dissatisfaction. My suggestion to everybody is if you're unhappy with the guy who, the woman who is currently representing you in Congress, run against him. Get out and vote, get out and tell people, and try and make a difference. Maybe that's how it changes.
Paul, thanks a lot. Look forward to talking to you again next week.
Yep, we'll talk to you soon.
That's Paul Singer, USA Today politics and Congress editor. He joins us each Wednesday at this time to talk Congress. He tweets at Singer News.